about the kingdom of God. I think I'm on. I just heard the... Okay. Did they catch my intro?
Sorry, no.
Probably not. Okay. This is, welcome to the Sabbath Hour. Somebody forgot to push a button. I pushed one this time, Cheryl.
Did, and I saw you sitting there, but I pressed my button and my computer said, huh? It does that occasionally.
We're just a slave to technology. But anyway, so it sounds like we're off and running anyway. Well, today we're going to talk about a couple of things. I've been putting off Blog Talk for the last couple of weeks because of the fact that I've been extremely busy. We're out in the middle of haying season, and we had other gatherings that just limited my time. So network operating the show, and one of our co-hosts is on the road, and he doesn't have DSL access, so we had somebody else take over. But through this process of networking, we have lots of people to cover the different bases, and that's really what the network is all around and all about. It's about having people pulling up and taking the slack, and that's what it's kind of like the old game Red Rover, will so-and-so come over, and you all hold hands, and the kid runs across and tries to break the net, the human net there. But the flexibility and the holding together absorbs the shock of that, and everybody stays together, supposedly. And that's what a network is, and that's what Israel operated with, was this network of people connected with each other, bound to each other, not by contracts, covenants, and constitutions, but by relationships, by a commonality of relationships. This is, of course, exactly the same method that was used by the early church that helped them during the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. It's what will help people if they will so seek this networking kingdom in the days to come, because there's going to be another decline and fall of the world empire, the new world order, which isn't that new or that orderly. and we see, actually, I just got a report about noon about from an English economist who has actually been fairly accurate, I guess, who was talking about the fact that they're looking for another round of depression or recession in January of 2013. And, of course, there's all kinds of predictions about 2012 in December. And so you'll have all these gloom and doom predictions on the horizon. Since I was a little boy, I realized that there was a very big significance in what goes on in space in relationship to the Earth and the Sun, that they are directly connected. And I remember looking through a telescope at the Sun and seeing sunspots when I was a little kid and saying, this is important. And yesterday we were hit by a coronal mass ejection that actually pushed radiation levels up into the red. The day before we were hit by one that pushed them up into the yellow, and we happened to be standing outside when it hit. And those of us who, we were expecting it, we knew it was coming. And it was from a small, rather M-class flare, not a very big flare. And we actually could feel it on our skins, this increased radiation from the sun, just as if you put your hand next to a hot stove, and it's an actual radiant heat that's coming from the sun, and it comes into the atmosphere. Actually, most of it is absorbed by the Van Allen radiation belt and passes into the Earth through the core. Excuse me. And it has an effect on the whole planet. Eventually, it will cause earthquakes and volcanoes. We just had an X-class flare the other day. It hasn't arrived here yet, but it caused what we call a proton event, an immediate Earth space environment event, which usually means that it's headed our way. And an X-class flare is a little bit stronger, but we're actually expecting mega flares, which are 10 times that. And we've seen them before, but they haven't come towards the Earth, and they'll probably be coming towards the Earth. Now, will that happen in December? Will it happen in January? Will it happen 2 years, 10 years from now? I don't know, but it will happen. The Earth's been hit with them, at least by major X-class flares. We don't know if it was a mega flare in 18. I actually can't remember now. I think it was 1885 or 1895, or 1885, I think it was. And it actually melted telegraph wires. That's how the energy level that it reached. If it happened, the same type of event happened today, it could cut out the power grids for the entire sunlit side of the Earth. These are real things. Major physics outfits and astronomical groups have said that this is a real threat. This is not just some shaman in South America or somebody trying to sell books. It's a real threat. And what it means is, it doesn't mean the end of the life on the planet, but it could mean the end of the lifestyle that you're used to. Because they're talking about not only knocking out power for a few hours, but for as much as 6 months, for an entire continent. That would change life as you know it. And so these threats are looming. Plus, we have economic breakdown. EU is, you know, European Union is suffering, and the euro is suffering, and the U.S. dollar is holding its own simply because of how bad things are in China and Europe. And so we're facing this. Already millions of people have lost their homes. So we're trying to get people to network together, not to depend on government, but to depend upon each other, which is the nature of God's government, to help each other out. In order to do that, especially during hard times, you have to have an actual relationship with people. And this is what the early church was doing, developing that relationship. People who signed up with Christ and the apostles, in other words, people who got baptized, were cast out of the welfare systems of Judea and Rome. And they didn't have access to the bank at Ephesus or any of those things. They had their own system. And it took lots of very talented, hardworking people to make this come about. And this, of course, is what John the Baptist was preaching. This is what Christ was preaching. This is what the apostles were appointed to establish. Look out amongst yourselves, find men you trust, and we'll put them over this business. What business? The business of taking care of the widows and orphans and needy of your society. Because the social welfare system, which were extensive at that time, were going to fail along with the economy. The price of a sack of wheat went from 6 denarii to 120,000 denarii, and you were still only halfway to Constantine. Christianity was still being persecuted. Birth certificates were mandatory. Breaking the rules and price controls were often carried the death penalty. Now, during part of that time, there was a lot of good news. They had universal health care. But Christians weren't having access to that universal health care because they didn't have the titulus. They didn't have the charisma that was required in order to get access to those benefits. But it was okay, because they had their own system, and that's what church was. It was a system of welfare. That's what religion was, a system of welfare that depended upon health, faith, hope, and charity. That was their health care, each other. And they were very sophisticated about it. The union and discipline, I'm quoting here, of that early Christian society, which was called a republic in the same book or series of books, which was The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire by Edward Gibbons. It was referred to as the Republic. And this, of course, is what made America great in the beginning, in the first century of the United States, was the ability of the communities to take care of each other. And government remained small and not a central element of your society, even in the days of Grover Cleveland, if you called the White House, the president was known to answer the phone. Their staff was minuscule compared to what it is today. And why? Because government has grown. Our dependence on government has grown. And so in our show earlier this morning, 2-hour show, we talked about different things that happened on this day in history. And in 1846, the U.S. annexed California, or at least they proclaimed in Monterey that they were annexing California. And we can see shifts now that you can go to parts of California and it looks like Mexico has gotten it back, because you can go into a Walmart there and nobody speaks English. Everybody speaks Spanish. So there are shifts taking back. But the idea of a government simply annexing under its authority entire populations and territories is a staggering idea. It's an amazing idea, and it's foreign to most of the history of the world. And we see the same thing on this day in history following that, around 1898, where the United States annexed Hawaii. And this suddenly said, Hawaii is now ours. It's now subject to our authority. We're annexing it. You know, we have a flag, and so now you're a part of our country. And that's a very interesting. We can go into about a 10-hour show on the fact that there are parts of Hawaii that have never been annexed, that still belong to the royal house of Hawaii, and who gave it to the people. Problem is, there aren't any people in Hawaii. There are only subjects in Hawaii. There are persons in Hawaii, which is another whole topic, which we won't cover. But there's actually a part of Hawaii that the United States doesn't really have this annexing jurisdiction over because of a unique history there. And there are parts of America that are like that, too. And it's outside of their jurisdiction. Yet it's within the boundaries of the country. But that, again, that would take a huge element of time that we don't have on this show. So we'll just skip over that. Enough that it's said. On this day in history also, in 1981, Ronald Reagan appointed a chief justice to the Supreme Court, a first woman chief justice. Now there's been more than one woman chief justice. We've had Black justice on the Supreme Court. We've had Roberts was a justice on the Supreme Court. We had a show that talked about the subsidizing nature of citizenship in the United States and why Roberts was correct in saying that they're just taxing you and you do have to have health care, because that's an executive administrative power that has fallen into the hands of the presidency, not by their acts as much as by our own acts, by the fact that we are subsidized. And if you want to know what I'm saying about that, you can go back and listen to the archive show that talks about that, which is on this station's website, and then we also have it on our website, so you can listen to it in several places. But the other thing we pointed out this morning is that there were a number of birthdays today on this day in history, which includes John D. Rockefeller and Ringo Starr. And John D. Rockefeller had a particular plan of a new world order along with a lot of other philanthropic individuals, and they have moved very much in that direction, not as some unique idea of their own, but this is Babylon the Great. This is what it always has been. And the way they gain power is the offering of gifts, gratuities, and benefits. And it weakens society so that society becomes absolutely dependent upon the government that they put in power. And so if you want freedom from that, you have to change. You have to not depend on that government. And the way to do that is to gather together in free assemblies and start depending upon each other. And a strange spiritual event takes place when you attempt to do that with true sincerity. You begin to see things you couldn't see before, because every time you take that step towards the kingdom that they are offering, you're stepping away from the light. You're actually losing vision. Every time you covet your neighbor's goods, every time you give power or right to choose that should be with you to someone else, you lose vision, you lose perception. And it's very small amount, or at least appears to be that way, because as you lose that vision, as you lose that perception, you also lose the sensation. I feel like I lost something. I feel like I left something, but I don't know what it is, because it becomes outside of your world, and you actually are falling to a state of consciousness away from your natural state. And now if you see somebody do something that is outside of what you consider to be possible, you say, well, that's a miracle. And it's not a miracle. It's just outside of what you believe your nature is. You see, as you fall, you begin to think, well, I'm still in my nature. But you haven't. You have fallen from your natural state. And, you know, we talk a lot about law and the law of nature and social contracts. And social contracts is defined as stepping away from natural state of man into a civil state, into a regulated state, into a contractual state. And you literally contract the rights of man by placing some of the rights of man in this external body, which we call body politic or corporate state or the state or whatever you want to call it. But the reality is that as your nature falls away from its natural state, you can no longer remember or see or experience or have a sense of you and the way you should be in your natural state. So what we're seeing a lot of times is people are beginning to wake up and they're saying, well, wait a minute, maybe in a dream state, maybe and when you're sleeping or maybe just when you wake up, you have this revelation that something else is true. Something else is real. And you see evidence of it when you look and you study nature around you, that there is something more to our natural state than I have previously come to realize. But you can't always put your finger on it. We try to identify it. We try to put labels on it. And we talk about it, you know, the power of now and human understanding and meditation and all these kinds of things. And those labels are our attempt to identify what we seem to have lost. And what we have lost is that natural state. And we need to try to get back to that, but we can't quite get back to it of our own volition. And the world is trying to get us to respond to its volition. It's trying to lead us in a certain direction, away from the natural dominion over the laws of physics that we should have in man's natural state. And so how do we get back? How do we find our way back to where we should have been, to that natural state, to that state that we seem to have lost and fallen away from? Well, of course, those Ten Commandments we are given are actually a guidepost. And, of course, that which does not want us to be free, wants us to be subject to it, doesn't want us to understand those Ten Commandments. As a matter of fact, they don't even want us to post the Ten Commandments. Now, they have distorted our understanding of them tremendously. Someone on the show this morning in the chat room referred to the fact that they said that I just referred to the Ten Commandments as a notion, or I think that's what he said, or suggestion. And I said they should be called the Ten Suggestions. And, of course, they are Ten Suggestions, but they're suggestions from God. So they're not like suggestions from Steve or Bill or Rob or Larry down the street. It's suggestions from God. And he's saying, you know, you really need to do these, because if you don't, there will be natural repercussions, bearing false witness. Natural repercussion. If you get comfortable with lying, not seeing things as they really are, not saying things as they really are, it will have a spiritual cutting off effect. It will cut you off from the tree of life. If you covet your neighbor's goods through any system or method, it will cut you off from understanding that will make your natural state a reality in your life. And it will make you more and more subject. And what we see today with the entire world going back into bondage, we're back in the bondage of Egypt, worse than we were even in Egypt. You don't have to just pay 20% of your labor to the government in whatever country you're in, but you have to pay 30, 40, 50, 60, 70% in France. And, you know, sometimes that's just income tax. But the reality is that can also be gasoline tax, property tax, sales tax. All these things are taking out of your sweat and blood. And they should, because you've been slothful. I'm not advocating not paying those taxes. I'm advocating returning to that natural state in which those things will fall away. And this is what Christ is actually preaching. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all else shall be supplied to you. Because you've been cut off from all else because you've gone the other way. So by turning around and going back closer to the light, closer to understanding, closer to righteousness, automatically the power you need to obtain that which you should have had all along will come to you. You won't create it. It will come to you. You cannot save yourself. You must be saved. But you can keep yourself from salvation by never repenting, never turning around and going back. So, in order to turn around and go back, you know, everybody's coveted their neighbor's goods to one degree or another. Almost everybody's gone to public school. Everybody has applied for benefits. Everybody's applied for protection. Everybody's looked to the governments of the world for their salvation in this world. Although they say, oh, what? Real salvation is after I die. Well, Jesus came in spirit and truth. All power in heaven and earth was given unto him. If you cannot seek the kingdom now and his righteousness now, don't expect to find it after you die. You've got a job. Seek it. Strive. This is what Jesus said. Now, you won't be able to do enough. He'll do the rest. But if you're not moving in that direction, if you're still praying for benefits from those men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority one over the other, you're doing contrary to what Christ said, and he's probably going to say you're a worker of iniquity. So you want to start turning around, and how do you turn around? Well, you turn around by becoming like Christ. And what was Christ? What did he come to do? Serve. How do you serve one another? Well, you can go out and take the neighbor's trash out, and you help little old ladies across the street, or you can get a little organized about it. Personally organized. Not organized from the top down, but organized from the bottom of your heart up. In other words, gather together in a free assembly with other people. And this is what we were talking about and how to do that. And we kind of went around the long way to get it. We pointed out that these chief justices are gods. We read in the Bible how the same word that we see translated God hundreds of times in the Bible is also translated judges in Exodus 21:6, Exodus 22:9. These are judges. Judges, that's what the word God means, ruling judge. And how do you make covenants with the gods of the people around about you? You make covenants with them. That we're going to give you the power to choose for us, to decide for us, to rule over us. Even the election of a chief executive officer, which they call a king in the translation in Samuel, is a rejection of God. So when you say, well, what do we do then? Well, again, that free assembly, coming together. Now you can't do it all at once. You have to do it step by step, and that's what that's all about. Now, according to Ringo Starr, all you need is love, or at least he played the drums for that song. Anyway, but according to John D. Rockefeller, you need something else. You need to become this subject member of a corporate state whereby you depart from the state of nature and you become civilized under the authority of a central power. And that will weaken you. It weakened the people in Sodom and Gomorrah. It weakened the people under Nimrod. And that's what the sin of the Sodom and Gomorrah was. In a time of affluence, they did not strengthen the poor. They weakened them. They weakened them with a system of socialism. where they force the contributions of the people to provide for a guaranteed benefit, which they called salvation in this life. The problem is this carries over into the next life, that if you think it's okay to covet your neighbor's goods in this life, then you will be grouped with all those other people who think it's okay to covet your neighbor's goods in the next life. And that's what we call hell. And so you don't want to go that way. You want to go the way of Christ. You want to gather together and love one another as I have loved you. That's what Christ says. And that means you don't gather together so you can hear the choir. You don't gather together so you can hear this really exciting speech by the minister. You gather together so you may be like Christ and come to serve one another. Now, serving one another doesn't mean everybody who needs $10, you give them $10. Everybody who needs $1,000, you give them $1,000. Serving may be, I'm not going to give you a dime because you got to learn to manage your money. Serving may be telling somebody the truth. You know, you're an alcoholic. Serving somebody may be saying, no, I'm not going to cater to your weakness. I'm going to teach you how to fish so you learn how to take care of yourself. And that is kingdom. Those are kingdom tracks. Homeschooling, home health, home industry, working together, becoming your own home bank, where your congregation helps you get started in a business because they want to see you successful. And your minister is health, education, and welfare. He's also the Small Business Administration. But he operates on this voluntary basis because you actually come to each other, A, like Minutemen for Righteousness. This is very important to understand this simple principle, and that's all we're talking about, and that's what Christ was talking about. That's what John the Baptist was talking about. If your neighbor has a need and you have a way of fulfilling it, do so. If he has a need for a coat and you have two, share. But you also know that your charity cannot weaken your neighbor. It must strengthen him. That's the nature of it. And we'll talk more about that when we return to the second half of the Sabbath hour.
Oh, that was perfect. Oh, you have no idea how everything that you've been saying is in such synchronicity with what's been going on behind the scenes lately. So it's just awesome.
My God, behind the scenes. I wasn't going to talk about all this stuff. It's funny, when I come on this show, everything kind of takes a turn. And I really believe that it takes a turn because of your audience and because of the people that are listening. You know, I believe that. Now, I can't prove that, but you're very witness to it. Somehow or other, I'm speaking to the very things that you guys are realizing or experiencing.
Yeah.
And we don't even talk from one week to the next. This is our whole together.
I know. I never talk to you is when we're on the air. And I, you know, because I always think that you, I know that you're so busy with the farm and everything that you do, plus all of your other ministry. It's like, this time is very precious to me.
Yeah. And, you know, I want you to feel free to, you personally call me when you need to. I mean, I've already spent 5 hours on the phone today. This is another one of those last-minute things when I came on, because my wife actually, I was on the phone with one of our ministers in Iowa, and my wife came in and says, you know, you only got 5 minutes to get on the air. Because my computer was in here dinging away. But we're running into the commercial break now.
Yes, we are. But, you know, that was well worth it.
Okay.
That was... Okay, well, thank you all for tuning in to Freedomizer Radio. You can find us at freedomizerradio.com if you'd like to join the chat. You can also listen from there. We have a player, a little blue box there on the left, to choose the Sabbath Hour Team Free State program and press the play button if you happen to be over on Blog Talk. And our phone number is 347-324-3704 if you'd like to call in and participate. So we'll be back after this short commercial message.
Yeah. You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Well, we're back. Thank you, Brother Gregory, for the offer of giving you a call sometime. You know, we all need to have our advisors and people that we look up to help us out now and then. So I appreciate that a lot.
Well, I know you mentioned it last week, and I sat by the phone all week long just waiting for that call. Now, I'm usually not too far from one phone or another. We got about four or five of them in here that ring. But, that's what we're here for, is to serve. And if there's some way we can be of help to somebody, that's what we want to do. And we want to gather all those other people that have that same nature. We don't want to gather people that just want to save themselves and that are afraid and don't want to do anything for anybody but themselves. I seen that years ago when we saw certain people, you know, kind of getting beat up by the system, and they were asking for help. And we'd written the book Covenants of the Gods, which has a lot of legal quotes in it and history in it about law and stuff. And so we had a lot of these people calling us for help. And so we'd go to their meetings, and I was at one meeting, and people were complaining about this, and people were complaining about that. It was a very corrupt county and a very corrupt town, and there was a lot of abuse of power. And so finally I stood up and I said, you know, what you guys have to do is that when this person's in trouble with their thing, you need to go down to the court with them so they don't go in alone. And when these people are in trouble, you need to come to their aid. And you know, when this family over here is in trouble, you need to come to their aid. And you guys have to work together because that's how it works. And the person right next to me says, I don't care about their problem. I just want my problem taken care of.
Oh, my goodness. You know,
I was speechless. And that was pretty stunning in itself. I mean,
it's a bad state of affairs when somebody is that, I mean,
that honest and open about being a jerk.
Well, maybe it's a lot of practice in chat rooms.
We didn't have a lot of chat rooms back in those days, but I didn't know we had chat rooms back in those days. But that was stunning, really. You know, way back when I was a young man, I actually was seeking to become a cop at one time. Passed all the exams, was working my way up. I whittled away about 500 competitors to a handful of jobs. And had a violent situation. I was running a security company at the time, and I saw all the people I'm protecting just abandon me. I handled the situation okay, and nothing bad happened to me. A few bad things happened to other people.
Oh, my goodness.
Which was me. But I actually didn't hurt anybody bad, but I restricted their movement, so to speak, for a little while. Until we could get them taken care of by the local constabulary. But the interesting thing is I realized these people didn't care about anything but themselves and their stuff. They didn't really care about other people. And I wasn't sure if I wanted to spend my life defending those. What I've ended up now is what I'm trying to do is spend whatever is the rest of my life bringing together the people that are seeking righteousness. I'm not interested in people just seeking freedom, which is what the kingdom of God is. It's the right to be ruled by God. I'm interested in people that are seeking the kingdom of God, the right to be ruled by God, freedom, whatever you want to call it, and the righteousness of God. And these are the qualifiers that we hear Jesus talking about. Those people, I would love to see those people come together, and I tell you that if they will come together in free associations, which we call the church, or his church, they will have the best survival tool that money could buy or can't buy. Because you can't really buy this. This brotherhood, it's not purchased, certainly not with Federal Reserve notes. It's purchased by your personal investment in the lives of others. Taking the time to get to know them. Taking the time to share your time with them. Developing those relationships of honor and trust, which our modern society is bankrupt of. They've lost. And this is one of the key subjects that we talked about this morning, is that the hue and cry of society, when you're in trouble and people know it, they hear somebody being attacked in the streets, they don't come. And we have to get back to that state, and most people don't want to go. But those of you who are willing to go need to get off your computer stools and start connecting with other people. And that's why we started the Living Network, that's it, where you can join based on geographical area and start connecting with other people. And we have some men and women that are really dedicating their time and their energies and their life to this, and they're going around. We've got somebody crossing from New York to California in the next week, and they will be stopping in wherever anybody wants to talk about this and share information with them. It's not a multi-level marketing. You don't have to join. You don't have to pay anything. Everything we offer as a matter of service. And we want to start gathering more and more of those people, and we finally are. And we've learned a lot of lessons over the last few decades of what not to bring into your living room, because there's a lot of charlatans out there. There's a lot of deceivers out there. There's a lot of users and abusers. And through the network, we're beginning to find out who they are, and they lose power. Because we're about turning on the light. In order to do that, we have to look at ourselves as we really are. The reason we have fallen subject to the Nimrods of the world is because we have been turning off of the light, turning away from the light. And this is something I mentioned on the show before, is that the angel in the Garden of Paradise, these metaphors of spiritual reality that we see expressed in the biblical pages, is actually there as a beacon to lead you back to the tree of life. But you flee it. You flee the light. Because in order to go back, you have to see yourself as you really are. And, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago when we were on the show about a particular meditation exercise, and I was curious if anybody tried it. It's really very simple, and it goes back into Hebrew ancient scripts. You'll find it in a lot of other cultures. And meditation is a very dangerous thing, but yet it's a very useful thing, and the key difference is you, what you're looking for. We've got a lot of articles that I've been working on and chapters of new books that will start to explain these things. I give little hints about it, more so on this show than any of the other shows, that there's an awakening that needs to take place, that you realize that there's at least two of you. There's you, the real you, deep down there, that was born from your mother's womb into that fleshy body that is identified as you. Steve, Dave, Bill, Mary, whatever your name is. That's you. That's your spirit. That's you. But then there's this other you that's created by all the things that happen to you, all the ideas that are fed into your ears, into your eyes, all the imagery, all the events of your life. And that's not really you, but that's what you often become. And that's why there was a guy, I can't remember his name right offhand, but he wrote a book of something like The Importance of Being Now, or The Importance of Now, and he was right. He made that revelation, is that there's at least two of you, the one, the real you, and the other one. And I was just talking to a minister about the fact that a lot of times people are traumatized when they're 7, 8, 14 years old, whatever it is, when they're still a very young individual, and it retards their growth spiritually and emotionally. Because they can never look at the trauma of that event. They can't see it. They can't address it. It's too painful. And it retards their growth, and they never grow up. And I can name you dozens of people that I know that have this problem. They can't seem to grow up because of this traumatic event that happened when they were still a young person. They can't come face to face with it. And that's just one example of that. But there isn't anybody who's listening that doesn't know somebody like that. They just think they're a jerk, but the reality is they've never grown up. And they haven't grown up because of some trauma in their life. And I'm not using that as an excuse. The reality is just a reality that it retards our growth. Just like if you starve, there were a number of people that starved during World War II because of the shortage of food in Europe. Never able to have children after that, because during a few years when they were a young person, they starved and they became infertile and their body never recovered. And your psychological body can also never recover on its own. But with the right kind of help, if we start that journey back, everybody can recover of everything. But you have to be willing to go, and that means you have to be willing to see sometimes painful things about yourself. And meditation that helps you open your eyes and see these things can play an important value, just like physical exercise can play an important value in your physical well-being. And so one of the things that brings us face-to-face with ourselves so that we can see ourselves as we really are is trying to live a life of charity and kindness and forgiveness. And when you try to gather together in a free association of congregation, you're going to get all kinds of people. Some of them you might call normal, and some of them you might not call normal. They will be different because there's a variety of people out there, but they're real people with real souls inside them. And when you have to contend with them and their foolishness, and their problems, and contend with them with patience, you're going to discover something. You're not really very patient. You're not as loving as you would like to think you were. Now, it's really easy to appear to be loving if you get in with a church where everybody smiles, and they slap each other on the back, and they all just hug each other and everything. There's still backbiting, still gossiping going on behind the scenes. But up front, we all look great. You know, we're all happy. I'm happy, you're happy, we're all happy. Very dangerous. And we talked about that in our shows on cult. You know, be wary of the place where you go where everybody's happy and everybody's getting along and everybody's smiling because it's a facade. It's a fake. It's whited sepulchres. It's not real. We're all complex people with complex problems. We all have burdens that we're carrying. And if we're in a healthy relationship with our free association congregation, we will be slowly coming to a realization of those problems. And people will actually be helping you not lift the burden off of you, but help you set it down. Because when the people set down the trauma of those events in their life, and those traumas when you're a little kid are some of the worst, but you can be traumatized at 45 or 50. But when they help you get over that trauma, forgiveness works. Real forgiveness really works in setting you free. And these are all part of that seeking the kingdom and its righteousness. So anyway, Is that noise coming from you, Cheryl?
I apologize. I didn't mute my phone. I had to take the puppy for a walk.
Okay.
It's a little windy out here. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's wind then I'm hearing. I never know if somebody's trying to interrupt or something. But we're so relaxed here, we can talk about that.
Yes, we can. You know, this is a live show, and you know, I'm usually so enthralled with what you're saying, I don't breathe and interrupt.
So anyway,
I learn so much from you every week. I really do. It's like, and this may sound really weird, but if I had a spiritual leader in my father, it would be somebody like you.
Okay.
And
well,
I
will have to tell that to my kids.
know what? Our kids are the hardest sell, honestly.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. Actually, my kids have a certain amount of respect for me, that's for sure. But over the years, we've had a lot of people come and I remember once somebody was here at a retreat, and they says, "What's it like having such a genius for a father?" And I saw my daughter roll her eyes.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But my daughter's a little bit of a genius in her own right. She has a tremendous mind and memory and stuff like that. But occasionally, I mean, we don't ever have any arguments or conflicts in that sense. But, you know, it is father-daughter thing. And our children are the hardest sell because they see that we are human, that we don't walk on water, that we are just flesh and blood. And it's kind of like, you know, we live out here in the wilderness. You look out our front door and you can see for 50 miles. You can see mountains all the way around us. You know, there isn't 100 people that live in our end of the valley. There might be 100 homes, but most of them are empty. And you can literally get on a horse and ride in a straight line for days and not cross a fence or see anybody. So that's just the environment we grow up in, and that's natural for us. You know, if you lived in the cities all your life, you walk out the front door and there's another house, and another house, and another house, and another house, and black top surface, and you know, you live in a different world. And we get used to this, and we begin to take it for granted. And it's the same way, you know, with your parents. You know, a lot of kids have pretty good parents, pretty good as parents go in the world. And some of the ones that have some of the best parents don't always appreciate them as much because they've been a little bit spoiled. They've had good parents. You know, maybe it wasn't quite like Leave It to Beeve, but they're pretty decent. But the fact is when we start talking about God's standards and we're talking about true awakening back to where we should be in the man's natural state, it takes us out of our comfort zone. And, you know, that's kind of been my mission in life for everybody. You know, having a father like me has probably been a tremendous burden, and I'm very sympathetic because of the fact there really isn't too many places to hide in this household. You know, you're kind of exposed, and there's a certain stress with that. But, you know, overall, our family relationship compared to almost anybody we know is fantastic. But still, you know, kids want to develop their own. You know, I'm kind of an overshadowing personality, and you know, I've made great efforts not to overshadow my kids, give them the chance to make their own decisions. And of course, all my kids are grown now. I mean, we got. I think we got 10 grandkids, and we got another one on the way. So we're beginning to repopulate the earth with people that are hopefully awake and aware. So, and I, a lot of my kids don't see all the metaphysical stuff that's going on all the time in our lives. They, you know, the world doesn't tell you about these things, and as a matter of fact, you know, they don't. And that's okay, because it's very dangerous if you start talking about metaphysical things as if you can put them under a test tube and study them. They're really a thing of realization and awakening. And there's a lot of artificial spirituality out there and a lot of deceivers. I mean, the devil is a spiritual creature. He has a spiritual presence, and he is able to appear as an angel of light. And so that's why we have things like these Ten Commandments, these guidelines, that if you find yourself violating those guidelines, going over the rumble strip, so to speak, of those Ten Commandments, something is wrong with your spiritual guide. He should not be guiding you over those edges. And you see, we talked about it in the cult leader show, how, you know, these people, they can be talking about all this righteousness, and they're actually leading you to do terrible things. And they've actually mass suicides, mutilations, everything in some of the extreme cases. But most people are in some form of cult, and they just don't get quite that extreme so that they can continually be distracted and taken away from a personal realization. One of the things that a lot of people who do get to know us is I don't tell people what to do. You know, I talk about precepts and principles, but they must go to that inner tree of life themselves and find out what they should do. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, I won't talk to people who want to use me as a sounding board, you know, when they're dealing with problems. But if they watch, I'm very careful about not becoming a guru or director of their lives, except to tell them to find that spiritual direction point in their own lives, that spark of light that can guide you and tell you when to go, when to stop, when to sit down, when to stand up. And it can actually tell you to do these things, but it won't make you do them. And, you know, I've given examples in the past and different stories about how I'd be dead today if it wasn't for the fact that suddenly God told me, if God hadn't told me and I hadn't been used to acting upon what he was telling me, to slam on the brakes or to do this thing or that thing and take your foot off the gas, so to speak. Don't go, stop. And so for me, it's a real reality. For other people, they still need help with their unbelief. And in the days to come, maybe we can do that, provide them with some help. But right now, we're looking for that team of networking people who are moving in the direction of listening to that spiritual guide that's from heaven above. Because there's a lot of spiritual guides that are not from there. But anyway, must have been everybody else was enthralled too, because nobody called in.
Oh my goodness. Well, you know what? That must be it, because nobody wants to interrupt you. We only get you for the hour a week here at Freedomizer. So I know people can go listen to all the rest of your shows up on your website. If you want to, do you want to give that out?
Yeah, hisholychurch.org, we have a lot of the shows posted there. We also have another site, preparingyou.com, and that you can spell that U out or put the letter U in there, but it's a wiki site, so all the different members of the network can add to that, and we have an audio section that has all the shows archived, or at least a lot of them. It doesn't have all of them. We also have Keys of the Kingdom .info. Somebody else manages that site, and it has shows in there too, but I don't know if it has the Freedomizer shows. Those are only on the wiki site. So, but we're starting to put icons by the shows so that you can find out which ones you haven't listened to, because a lot of people are icon driven these days.
Yes.
So that you can, and we try to have topics to them. And this show is kind of a completion of the thought that we had on this morning show. So hopefully it will help some people. I will not remember what I said today.
If questioned about it later.
I don't remember everything that people tell me or that I say. But the principles are all there. So I can tell if somebody misquotes me. I said, well, I didn't say that. I know, because that isn't what I say. But specifics, I don't necessarily remember that, because I'm really trying to operate in the spirit, and God is telling me what to say. But we are out of time.
Yes, we are. And Miss Cookie raised her hand. Did you want to say hi, Miss Cookie?
Yes, I just love listening to him, and I was just wondering, was it Eckhart, the one you were thinking of? Yeah,
Eckhart.
About the inner and outer person and about our spiritual side and our physical side.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff that he says is true, but there are some dangers in that too, and we're going to actually have a piece on that to help people. Whenever you're dealing with these spiritual things that have to do with the mind, they're there's always a kind of a yin-yang to them. There's a, because the evil can create an artificial appearance of righteousness and deceive you, and that's, it's always in that business. So in order to have, you know, kind of a spiritual guide approach to it, we try to show you what to watch out for to protect you, because that's what we're interested in. But, yeah, that's Eckhart. Not a very good speaker, but he did stumble on some realizations that I cannot argue with.
Well, I love listening to you about it.
Okay. Yeah, I often stick around just long enough to listen to you for a little bit, but I'm actually going to have to run today again. So I listen to you quite a few times, Cookie, and then I download the program later on, and then I get to listen even more. So.
Well, I love listening to you. It makes my Sabbath day just wonderful, and I just love it.
Well, I'll keep coming back until you want to burn me at the stake.
No, I'll probably be the first one burnt there.
Okay. Well, we'll be in good company.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us, Keys of the Kingdom, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.